interested in caregiving. This is fine. This is fine. We want this to be an interactive time. I'm grateful for the wealth of experience and wisdom that is present here. And so I'm going to be giving plenty of time to make sure we access that tonight. So, by way of introduction, usually when I prepare for something, I like to figure out, okay, what is my purpose for the meeting? And I think we could say I have three purposes in mind. One is to provide inspiration, encouragement, and useful information for caregivers and would-be caregivers. Secondly, to increase an awareness of the needs of the elderly and their caregivers. And thirdly, to encourage willingness to help meet those needs. And so I don't know exactly in what category all of you are, but you know. Well, the reality is that we are all getting older. And I have to think, sometimes as I look at these issues, I have to think about what my mother used to say. And I'll say it in Dutch first. We just don't know what we will be like when we get old. And so each of us is getting older. And someday it will be our turn. It may be our turn, if the Lord gives us long life, to be cared for. And so I guess in this thing we take turns. I was wishing for a bit of a scriptural basis for this. I think the evening is primarily focused toward practical kinds of ideas, but I would like to just begin with seven verses from Ecclesiastes 12. First, I thought about reading it in King James and then saying, okay, this means this and this means this. And then I decided, well, no, instead of that, I think I'll just read it in the Message, and that will be one person's idea of what this might be. Ecclesiastes 12, honor and enjoy your Creator while you're still young, before the years take their toll and your vigor wanes, before your vision dims and the world blurs, and the winter years keep you close to the fire. See, as we go through this, think about how what is happening to people as they age. Verse 3, in old age, your body no longer serves you so well. Muscles slacken, grip weakens, joints stiffen. The shades are pulled down on the world. You can't come and go at will. Things grind to a halt. The hum of the household fades away. You're awakened now by birdsong. Hikes to the mountains are a thing of the past. Even a stroll down the road has its terrors. Your hair turns apple blossom white, adorning a fragile and impotent matchstick body. Yes, you're well on your way to eternal rest while your friends make plans for your funeral. Life, lovely while it lasts, is soon over. Life as we know it, precious and beautiful, ends. The body is put back in the same ground it came from. The spirit returns to God who first breathed it. We have and so this is a bit of a picture of what it is for those who are older. We are given very clear instruction to honor our parents. That's one of the commandments. In Proverbs 16:31, it says, the hoary head is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. And in Leviticus 19, it says, thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear thy God. I am the Lord. And so providing care for those who, for our parents or for those who are older, can be a real challenge, especially as the roles may need to be reversed, and so there are these challenges And yet, in all of this, we are called to respect and to honor. And so those are just some things, I guess, to think about as we move into the evening. Linda has a another word of introduction here.
Some of you will remember Elaine Yoder, who was here for, I think, 1 year, maybe around 1980, going to school in the area. She was from North Dakota at the time and later moved to Pennsylvania, and her mother lived with her about the last 12 years of her life. She works at Life Ministries, and I'd like to read a few things from the September 2014 Life Ministries newsletter. As a single woman who had never mothered a child of my own, some of the challenges seemed surprisingly like mothering. One of my favorite lines during these years was, "It's amazing to learn to mother by mothering your mother." I think I experienced the full complement of emotions that are a part of the constant demands mothering brings to one's time and energy. This role reversal can stir a sense of confusion and loss. Mom, who was always there for me over the years, was in significant ways no longer there. She was now dependent on me. How do I find meaningful ways of caring for me with this new loss of support and the demands mom's care brought? The years of caring for mom have taught me so much, things that I did not know I needed to learn. Some of the study I was able to do during the time highlighted teachings about the kingdom of Jesus, his care for those who are incapacitated and cannot care for themselves. This upside-down kingdom measures success and significance so differently than our contemporary world. In the kingdom of Jesus, it is the last, Matthew 20:16, and the least of these, Matthew 25:40, that are priority to Jesus. One time we went to buy mom new shoes. Suddenly, she was sure she wanted red shoes. But red shoes were never something she would have bought when dementia wasn't gripping her mind. I was in a dilemma. I wanted to honor who Mom was and the things she stood for all her life. We finally decided on black shoes with a red lining. Mom liked her new shoes a lot.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you for that. So as we move into this, I think we'll look at just some basic principles of caregiving.
Well, several things that I thought about as far as principles of caregiving would be, one would be the golden rule. Think about how I would like to be treated if I would be my mother's age And another thing would be that it helped me to remember that they weren't, my mother was not trying to be cantankerous. She was probably doing the best she could. And that often helped me realize that, you know, that's all that's asked of any of us, is to do the best we can.
One thing that I think is basic, and it'll probably come up in some of these other sections too, is to take time, to not try to rush through things and just quickly get finished for the sake of having the job done, but to take time and make the people we're caring for feel loved and cared for. One thing that I wish I would have done better at was to be more observant about decline. For example, at one point, I was just so glad Mom could at least do the laundry, but I wasn't usually around when she was doing it. One time, Lois was there, and she saw Mom just kind of standing in front of the washer like she didn't know what to do next. And I wish I would have picked up on that. I should have thought of that. That probably wasn't working very well. But when one is in the middle of things, sometimes it's hard to see things objectively.
You're talking about being observant. Reminds me of a of a situation with my dad. At one point, I probably wasn't giving as good attention to some things as I should, and Aunt Alma informed me that she doesn't like him looking like he's in a rest home, and so that was a call to shape up a little bit. Okay, so what are some ways that we can honor our elderly?
One way that I thought of would be that if to ask questions. They can't always answer the questions, but to ask simple questions that they know the answers to. Not things like, well, it depends what stage they're in of aging. If their mind actually doesn't function anymore, then we shouldn't ask questions like that make them try to recall things that they just can't. But asking questions about their youth or things from long ago, I think that's a wonderful way to honor them and to and show that we're interested in what they had when they were young or even more recent than that. But yeah. One other thing that I thought about was catering to their wishes. That can be a little complicated sometimes, especially depending what it is. But if it's something that doesn't matter, like food and hobbies and those kind of things, give them what they want. They'll be happier. I remember Dolores saying one time that her mother ate food probably in the last couple of years that she would have never, ever eaten before. Well, it was fattening, for one. She would have just not touched it. But it tasted good to her. Dolores decided, so what? Let her have it. Because she enjoyed it. So there are some stages like that where I think we can honor them by giving them what feels good or tastes good.
I think some of my siblings thought I was a little too hard on Mom with her diet. She also used to be very careful what she ate. She would read labels and she studied things, and she was diabetic. And so I don't know that I found the perfect place. I tried to honor her and also tried to not let her do things that are really bad, really, really bad for her. So, but that is a balance that I'm not sure where it is. It's something that one needs to think about. Another thing is to appeal to them. There were times when I asked Mom to drink water that she just said no. And I can hardly just make my mom do something that she says no. I mean, and she really did need the hydration. But I learned that she let me spoon it into her mouth, and it wasn't really enough. But I did that then. So that was one way I tried to honor her. And I don't know what there is about fluids is just so distasteful to old people. It is, I think, fairly common. And it was something we worked with.
I think we'll just take a minute or two here to ask you, what are some things that you have learned or ways that you can honor the ones that you're providing care for? Do I have any contributions from you? Maybe you thought it was all going to be one way here. Yes, Arlen? Okay, you're saying in the case of Melody caring for your mom, a gentle sense of humor helps. Okay, good. All right. That's good. Gary, do you have something on?
I may be just a little off the track on honoring here, but when Rebecca talked about asking questions, it made me think of how I admired my wife's ability to, when mom was needing to get out of bed or to get up or something, and she was hurting, how that she was able to just simply and gently ask her, well, where does it hurt? And so those questions, I often admired her use of questions in the care through those years. There was something else that I thought of a bit ago with regard to the dementia. And I agree that somehow often my wife had a way to humor my mom along. That was good, but there was something about the drinking. Well, see, yeah, this was it. Mom also had problems with her lungs, and so it was a little risky to be swallowing too fast, and so that was another part of the equation for us, even as we tried to figure out how to help her. So maybe that's all I have now.
Well, we will be giving more opportunities too, but is there any other contribution right now? Okay. We have a question. The next question is fairly closely related to this first question, but it's a little bit different in that what makes the ones we care for feel valued? And I think we'll see what contributions we have here.
When I was thinking about that question, I thought, well, what makes me feel valued? And the thing that I came up with was time. Time spent makes me feel valued. And I think that is true for older people too. When we spend time with them, they enjoy it. Even if it isn't chit-chatting all the time, I think they enjoy the time spent. It makes them feel like they are worth something.
I think it also helps to think about the things that they used to enjoy longer ago. Most times this is something that they would still enjoy. Another thing that I wish I would have done more of, and I don't really think I would have, don't know when I would have done it, but I think I could have asked my sisters or sisters-in-law or their mom's prayer partners to take her, for example, on a wheelchair tour through the greenhouse during the winter. Especially with poinsettias, she would have really, really enjoyed that. I suggested it to Dad, and he didn't have much vision for it, and I shouldn't be surprised. I should have suggested it to somebody else. But she really did enjoy flowers, and I think that would have meant a lot to her. And that might be different for different people. Food preferences, that kind of thing. I think it's something to keep in mind, even when they maybe aren't able to express those preferences.
Okay, well, I think those are helpful ideas. So how can caregivers improve the enjoyment of life for the elderly? And I think we've been touching on some of that as we've been going, but what ideas do you have?
Probably doing some things for them that they can't do for themselves anymore. When I thought of my mother in that regard, I thought of reading. She enjoyed reading, but she couldn't anymore. And so once it came down to 24/7 care for her, she had started reading a book. It was a pretty big one, but she couldn't finish it anymore. And so whoever was there, that 24-hour period, read out of that book to her. And the next person that was there the next 24 hours read the book. So we just got snatches of it every 3-4 days, whatever our shift was, we got a snatch of the book. But she got the whole book, and she really enjoyed it. She couldn't read anymore, but she enjoyed the book. And so there are things like that that we can do for them that they can't do themselves anymore, that I think creates pleasure for them. I don't know how everyone is, but my mother was the kind that she enjoyed being in on the action. She enjoyed, even though she couldn't participate anymore, she enjoyed watching it. So moving her closer, moving her chair close to where the action was or what was going on, that was a good thing for her. That may not be a good thing for everyone, but it was for her. And so just being sensitive to what they enjoy or used to enjoy, I think is kind of key.
Reading was something that I did quite a bit of, well, more than usual with Mom those last, well, the 7 weeks I was living with them after the accident. I read to her, and we read several books through for her. And she usually didn't respond much, but one time I was reading along, and I read a Spanish word, and I didn't take time to tell her what that word means, and she interrupted me. She wanted to know what that word meant. I think she was listening. She was taking it in. And Dad read to her sometimes, too. I think she could still read, but it seemed like she didn't have much comprehension, or she didn't seem to enjoy it anymore toward the last. Another thing, about 3 years ago, I was, Ann Traug took Rosa Yoder and me to Wichita for a conference on caring for those with Alzheimer's. And one thing that they mentioned there that's often comforting to people, and I think this is especially true for people who aren't able to communicate much and maybe don't really have a lot of clear memories, is to have something in their hands, something comforting in their hands. And especially something that represents something they really liked, like a farmer holding a toy tractor or something like that. And I didn't really feel like Mom ever really got to that place, but I think that's something to think about when someone seems to not find very many things they can enjoy. Do that.
Well, I think that, you know, in our discussion, we're addressing possibly a fairly wide range of ages and abilities. And of course, as was mentioned earlier, sometimes it's kind of a moving target as to what their needs are. But I think there is a certain age where just simple things like taking them along for a bit of a road trip, 30 minutes or an hour or two, can really be helpful and will break up their day. And you know, or maybe it's taking someone along to the sale barn, or you know, there's just a variety of things, and sometimes there's even bonus humor that goes with it. Thinking about the time when I took Dad along out to pick up a long conveyor out about an hour or hour and a half southwest of here, and so I took Dan along, and he was sitting in the pickup at the far right seat. And so depending which way we'd go around the corner, he'd say, "Oh, no, it's not coming. Oh, now it is." And so and so that happened at about every corner. So that provided some merriment here for just bonus, you know. So anyhow. So but then we have to find then in some of this, well, actually, maybe, let's see, do we have time? Yeah, I think we have time. Are there contributions from you as to some things that you think would be good for the group to think about that we haven't talked about that can add enjoyment or blessing to for those in our care? Yes. May I just give it to you?
I thought of having the grandchildren involved. When Merle's dad stayed with us for 5 months, he and Micah played a lot of checkers together. And I think they both enjoyed that. And now, you know, with Mom and Dad getting older, you know, it's not quite every day, but often Christine and Micah say, "Can we go down to Dottie's?" No. And, you know, they can go down there oftener than we can just because they don't have as many responsibilities.
Yes, okay.
This is kind of a combination of what they enjoy and what, reaching back to what they would have enjoyed earlier. Mom was always very good with children, and so just to have children in her life, you know, just to have children coming over, that's really special. And also she enjoys singing, so, you know, we'll do that in an evening sometimes.
Well, and I'm sure you've all seen how the parents or older people's eyes light up when a family with young children comes and sings for them. Just tremendous, tremendous blessing for that that kind of thing. And then we get into sometimes kind of naughty kinds of things. How do we find the balance in protecting the elderly while still allowing them to remain as independent as we can? How do we find that balance?
I'm not sure, but the one thing that I that came to me was if we check up on our elders regularly, and if we keep in contact closely, for most of us, I don't think that's a problem because we live in community. But I think for some people that is a problem. They're just out there somewhere and they have no connections. And so, but I think we, if we stay in touch and if we stay close enough in touch to know when they need help and what protection they need, I guess, from the outside world. One of the things that I thought about was what we had to do when my mother kept getting all these telemarketer calls, and she didn't have the heart to say no. She didn't know. She didn't even understand all the time what they wanted. Well, it came to the point that we had to protect her by just simply changing the phone number and an unlisted number, and then we were okay. But that was just one way. She could still live by herself, but we needed to protect her from the outside for that. Driving can be an issue. When do you say no to driving that is unsafe? And I'm sure that varies for every individual. But I kind of remember when we had to do that for Laverne's father, and we knew very full well what that meant when we did that. It meant a much more commitment on our part to make sure that he gets where he wants to go and that he gets to still do some of the things he wanted to do because he was well capable of walking yet. But one of the things that we learned in that process was that he felt like he was more in control if Laverne took his dad's car and just drove him around. So sometimes in the morning when he'd get there, and Dad had it all planned. It was the day to go do so and so. Well, maybe it wasn't, but but Laverne usually went and just took him. But he felt so much better if it was his car that went. I think he felt like he was driving almost. So that helped in that case.
Back to this, what we were talking about earlier, the diet. One of the speakers at the conference I was at in Wichita made it look a little ridiculous to be so micromanaging of their diet. She said, 5 more years, you know, really, is it so important to extend their life if they're not enjoying it while they're here? And I don't know where that balance is either, but there's so many things to think about in trying to help them to maintain a healthy lifestyle. But this is another thing that I heard at that conference, don't keep them so safe that they don't enjoy life. If nobody is getting hurt, let them be who they are. Conflict increases stress, which brings a decline in function. One thing, well, as mom's abilities declined, there were some things she could still do quite well. For a while, she could empty the dishwasher. And for her, there's another thing there that I wanted to mention, is that what's good for one person, what's comforting and encouraging for one person, may have exactly the opposite effect on someone else. So, like Judith Knisley calls it, a customized care plan, is that what it is? So, but for her, she did quite well, and I had the confidence that when she refused to do something, it was because she really couldn't do it anymore. There was a point at which she just said she doesn't want to sweep the floor when I asked her, or put dishes away and that kind of thing. But for up till pretty much the last, she could fold laundry if it was small square pieces. Used to be that she'd fold towels too. And then one time I noticed that she was just lost with that. But I think she enjoyed doing things she could. And I think it's okay to ask somebody like that if they're floundering, if they want, you know, do you want me to finish that? I think that's fine. I think what would be really discouraging, though, if they thought they did something and they'd see us do it over. Another thing I think that can discourage people like that of doing what they can is if we push them, make them feel like they have to quickly do it. It does take time sometimes, and I think it's worth the time letting them if they have the ability and they could do it and it's not really frustrating for them. And there again, there's a balance where that line will probably change as a person gets older.
We made reference to the issue of driving, and that varies quite a bit with individuals. But one thing we found is that sometimes to limit where you drive is a good way to kind of step down. For example, there may come a time when you don't drive in town, or you don't drive after dark, or you don't cross the 50 highway, or those kinds of things. And so that can help with helping them to remain as independent as they can, but helping to protect both themselves and others. Yes.
Like,
do we allow? Yes. Well, that's a good point. Yes, long distances can be. Right, can be a different category, yes. Yes, well, yes, that's right. It may be difficult to take them as far as they'd like to go. That's right. And sometimes they may want to do more than what they're actually able to. My dad at one point begged, just thought he had to go to Thomas, Oklahoma. And so, finally we worked out to go to Thomas, and I don't know how many times on the way down he asked, you know, when are we going to get there? And it was a long trip. And so, of course, here again, it was that stage. And so, but we had reached the stage when it wasn't practical to take a four-hour trip anymore. But we didn't know it until we tried it. But then, yeah. So, other comments on this issue, and it's a real sticky one. And if you get there's more things that can be done in that line, but I think we'll keep moving here. I don't want to miss the contributions that are still waiting in the wings here. Elderly people like routines, is that right? There's some value in routine. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, there is something reassuring for most old people anyhow, about being in a familiar place and having a familiar routine so they know what to expect. when there's new things, they tend to feel like they don't know what they're doing, and that is a problem. Just backtracking a little bit, if that's okay, on the independent, something that Judith Nisley suggested, some things, they're simple, but they might make the difference with someone being able to stay home or not. It's just simple things like handrails, removing tripping hazards, loose rugs and that kind of thing, and moving some of the often used dishes down to drawers so they don't have to reach high to get them out of cupboards, and even alert buttons. One thing about that, we never did get that with Mom. I think by the time we realized we should have, it was probably too late. Nellie had one, and she fell outside. Edwin was sleeping, and she was there a while until a passerby noticed her. And it was the beginning of her final illness. She died a few weeks later then. But Leanna asked her why she didn't press her button. She said, well, I wasn't in trouble.
Sorry.
Well, it seems to me, too, that on the issue of alert buttons, it's probably good for them to get them while they have enough cognition to remember that if something bad happens, they use it. So I think that can be an issue. And I think on the other thing on independence, too, is to not hesitate to draw on home health care services. Sometimes just an evaluation or having someone, there are services available outside of hospice that can really help make a difference. And when you talked about grab bars and those kinds of things, that reminded me of how we got some help along those lines at an important juncture.
One thing about routine, I just thought I should cite my husband as an example. He went into his father and mother's house every morning at 8:30 for probably 10 consecutive years. 8:30, they knew he was coming. And so that was part of familiar routine. And they enjoyed it. They looked forward to it. It was part of the.
Talking about routines and schedule, are there certain times of the day that are harder for older people?
A lot of older people find it harder to function, and by the time the day is late afternoon or evening. My mom was never a real evening person anyhow, but it got especially that way after she got older. And it's common enough, there's even a name for it, sundowning. It got to the place where I never suggested a bath after dark. It just looked so overwhelming to her. And it's also sometimes called late day confusion. Late day confusion. When I looked for an internet definition, it said confusion and agitation for the elderly may get worse in the late afternoon and evening. So that's, and we talked about that at the workshop in Wichita, and the lady that was in charge of that workshop, she said, everything looks overwhelming in the evening.
Had you also said all that you want to say about routines, Linda, as well? So, okay. All right. Well, we mentioned earlier that giving time is one of the ways that we show value or honor those who are older. What are some tips about that would be good for us to consider as we think about visiting with the elderly?
Well, I mentioned part of this before, but as I was thinking about visiting the elderly, I think loneliness is often a big thing for them. Not because they never see anybody, but because they can't do the things they used to do. And I think along with loneliness, depression can be a part of their experience too. It doesn't have to, but it can. And so visiting them or just spending some time with them is a good way to break up the day in whatever manner we can or choose to. One thing I read one time was that if someone cannot think straight anymore, don't ask them when you come in to visit them, do you know who I am? And I'm sure some of you heard that too, because they may not be able to say your name and it's embarrassing. But tell them who you are when you come to see them. It's a good way to start.
I told, I think it was Amos Ann, I just told her that I'm Linda, and she said, I know. And she probably did. One time, I was with my dad when he visited Yost Miller, an old friend of his from Ohio, and Yost's memory was not what it had been before, and Dad wisely just didn't press the point of making him say if he knows who he is. But there was a point after we were there a while that Dad said he could tell that Yost, it registered with Yost who Dad was. After Mom and Dad's accident, Mom didn't talk as much. She didn't ask for help. And one time I was just urging her to ask, just to say my name when she needs help to get into bed or whatever. Usually I just have to, she'd just wait until I noticed that she needed help. And then she said, what is your name? Oh, I'm quite sure she knew who I was, but she couldn't think of my name. Another thing that I heard at the at that conference in Wichita was that for people who are very unresponsive, sometimes a baby or an animal can get them to talk. And there was two examples. One was of a lady who was on her death, a woman who was on her deathbed, and she hadn't spoken for a while. And they brought a baby in. And just remember, it's been quite a while since she had spoken. And then she saw this baby, and she said, what a lovely, lovely baby. In another situation, somewhat similar, someone who hadn't talked for quite a while, they brought a dog to her bedside, and then the dog licked her face, and the owner of the dog was very apologetic about that. But the woman said, dogs are very selective. people with Alzheimer's generally have trouble remembering things that happened recently, but often they can think of stuff, they can remember things from long ago very well. Just recently, I heard somebody say how Amos Ann was talking to somebody about Indiana. Oh, and she was very, contributing very well to the conversation. But more recent things are probably harder for her. And so if you can learn the triggers, some of those old people that you might think don't have much of a memory anymore might be able to tell you a lot about what happened long ago.
And so when we think, and so at some point we start talking to other people about how things are going with our elders, what are some things we should be careful about in that regard? Tips about talking about elders and their presence.
Well, one thing I learned when I was talking, in talking to an elder, is, and this was more with my mom, I guess, it worked best if I got down and was eye level with her. That just worked so much better than if she was sitting and I was standing. And so speaking at eye level with someone, and often it helped if I just touched her. It helped her to realize that someone is actually here and speaking to her. And so I'm sure that varies with the stage they're in, but that was very helpful for my mom. Sometimes when people are hard of hearing, you think that maybe they can't hear what you're saying, but it's amazing what they pick up, and they can't even let you know that they hear. And so I think we need to practice being careful what we speak in their presence. If it's things we wouldn't say about them.
This is something that I thought about a lot, too, and probably partly because spent time at Faith Mission and was so familiar with people who were nonverbal but understood a lot. But I also, and I especially thought about this, like when I was at the doctor and telling him things about Mom. I felt strange doing it, but sometimes I would just say, Mom, tell me if I'm not right. Correct me if I'm not saying it right. There's a few stories that I heard. One, when I was in northern Indiana, they said, I heard the story that somebody was presumed to be terminally ill, and somebody in his presence said, Budengsh Pagravasi, where do you think they'll bury him? And he lived to tell the story. He heard them say that. Another thing, Linda Zimmerman, she is now, she used to work in a nursing home, and there was a resident there who had needed to have a procedure with anesthesia, and afterward, he just talked. What he said did not make sense. But then he snapped out of it, and he said, I knew what I was saying didn't make sense, but I just couldn't say it right. And then it actually happened a second time, and he snapped out of it. But the third time, he never snapped out of it.
Well, we're not getting to the last question quite as soon as I had hoped we would, but I'm glad for all the contributions that we have had here. Caregiving can be fairly exhausting, and what are some ways to keep, or some tips in preventing burnout for caregivers?
Well, I think caregivers need time off, but that looks different for everyone. It's not a prescription that works across the board. One of the things that I thought about when when we were caring for my mom, that was a 24/7 thing for a while, and it was not unusual for people to stop in to see Mom and to see us. And those same people might stop every several days, but they were also the ones then who saw what we needed. They were the ones who did things for us without being told or asked to, because they just regularly stopped in. Just now and again, they stopped in. If we're never around, then we don't know what the caregivers need. And so I think staying in touch with the caregivers is important.
Rest is important for the caregiver and one being cared for. One thing that I heard at the Wichita conference was, if caregiving is number one, you will die before the person you care for does. It's important, but we need to take care of ourselves too, so we can keep doing what needs to be done. One thing that's important and maybe kind of hard to do is to accept offers of help. And, if necessary, ask for help. I know for me, it was hard for me to ask for help because I knew my siblings were busy with their own families, and and they often offered that I didn't need to ask, and that was very nice. Caregivers are actually prone to depression as well as the people they're caring for, and so there is a balance. It's important not to demand perfection from yourself. You can't do everything. And you can't do everything perfect.
Well, yes, it's true. We can't do everything perfect. I will say that when a parent passes, that for whom you have cared, and you know that you've done what you could, it is a great satisfaction. It is a real blessing to know that you've done what you could, and that is reward in itself. And is there a contribution from one of you, or perhaps a balancing point, or something we didn't think of that you'd like to offer? Yes.
Something that Ali Emma said about Lizzie was that it was a good plan for two people to be visiting at the same time. Then they could visit together. Lizzie couldn't contribute, but she could enter into she could, yeah, enter into community news, and it's much easier to have that type of a conversation than to just try to remember everything that you may have heard recently to relate.
All right. Yes, that's certainly a good idea. So, all right. Well, we know that a lot of you have provided a lot of care, and if whatever stage you are in, may the Lord guide you with wisdom and grace. And I'm hoping that some of you here who are younger will be sensitive to the needs that you can help with. I believe Linda has something, a bit of a wrap-up here yet.
A little more that Elaine Yoder had written. This was a tribute, part of the tribute to her mother that she read at the funeral. "Mom, you are finally home." And her mother's name was Cleora Marie Ropp Yoder. "Mom, you are finally home. You told me so many times over the past years that you wanted to go home. I was never sure where home was. In North Dakota, with Dad. After your stroke, you got displaced when you came to live with me. Sometimes you said you wanted to go home to your mother. Did that mean heaven? I tell you then that you lived with me, that this was our home. Would you stay here with me? You always agreed you would." I think in all of us there is written that sense of wanting to go home. In some seasons of life, it is more profound than others. When you said you wanted to go home, Mom, it always stirred a deep longing in me, too. We are all on the journey home. It's one step at a time, each day, moving toward our true home. Home is the place of belonging, of rest, of security, the place of refuge from the fray of life. It is ultimately going home to be with Jesus, the place of righteousness, a place of perfect peace, security, and rest. You've gone before us, Mom, with Dad, to that eternal place of rest. I miss you, Mom. I'm coming soon. I love you.
Thank you for that, and thank you to both of you for your contributions here. Shall we rise for a word of prayer? Oh, pardon me. Oh, yes. Linda has a handout here that will, do you want to just put on the table here, or at the back? It'll go on the back table. You want to say any more?
A number of the things we covered this evening, too, but it's kind of a summary of some of the concepts that we covered and a few things I think that we didn't mention.
And then I guess you have a few other materials on the back table as well that you're welcome to peruse, but to look at. So, okay, well, thank you for your participation and attention. Let's pray. Thank you, precious Lord, for the gift of the elderly that you give among us. Some are able to live to a full age, others are not. And so, Lord, we just ask that you would grant within each of us the willingness to do what we can for those who are older. Just thank you for that commitment that exists within this group, and I just ask that you would continue to empower each of us to learn better how to serve each other and how to serve you through this. May your name be honored, and may you guide us until that day when we all reach home. For your praise and for your glory, through Jesus. Amen.